This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. On the line with us is Michael Pollan. He's the author, journalist, activist, and professor of journalism at UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. His website, Michael Pollan, PollAn.com. You can tweet him at Michael Pollan as well. And he has a new book out and a new article in, it was the cover of the New York, it was the New York Times magazine, wasn't it, Michael?
Yeah, it was last Sunday, or the Sunday before last, yeah.
And I'm sorry, I don't have the book on my one sheet here. What's the title of the book?
Title of the book is How to Change Your Mind, and the subtitle is What the New Science of Psychedelics is Teaching Us About Consciousness, Dying, Addiction, Depression, and Transcendence.
Thank you. In fact, I did a book report on this book, which is on video and on our website now, but I just didn't have it right in front of me. So, Michael, how do you change your mind? Tell us what you learned in writing this book.
Well, what I learned was that psychedelic drugs, such as psilocybin, especially, and also LSD and mescaline, have been used for many years in healing, you know, as a therapeutic aid. And research into its value today resumed. There's a renaissance going on, and there are very important trials being conducted in places like NYU and Johns Hopkins, using especially psilocybin, because it's less controversial than LSD, to and psilocybin is the ingredient in magic mushrooms, to help people deal with anxiety, depression, addiction, obsession, and they're getting wonderful results. You know, these are still small preliminary trials, but the signal here is very strong. And so I decided to explore this, looking at it from a historical, scientific, and personal point of view.
I had tried psychedelics, LSD, mescaline, psilocybin, back in the late 60s as a teenager. And by the way, I'm not recommending that teenagers do this, but it just the knowledge, and I got, as a result of that, I had this deep belief, this deep knowing that the world that I see around me is merely a piece of it all. And that the way my brain works is only a fragment of this greater universal consciousness. I mean, that was just so real. It literally altered the course of my life. And to this day, you know, more than 50 years later, is still with me. Is that a common experience?
Yeah, it is. And I've been really struck since I've been out talking about the book to audiences all over the country, how many people had an experience like yours, Tom, some powerful experience that pretty much they've kept in a box labeled weird drug experience for many, many years, but in fact was transformative. And the drugs appear to make, temporarily rewire the brain in a way that gives people a very fresh and powerful perspective on the scene of their own lives and allows people to change. Most people do them at the age you were, you know, as teenagers or in their early 20s. But it also appears that they have special value for people later in life. I was approaching 60 before I actually experimented with psychedelics. And by the time you're 60, you're kind of stuck in certain habits of thought, for better or worse. You kind of have these mental algorithms to help you navigate the day. But they tend to blind you to the present moment, to fresh experience, to wonder, and to shake the snow globe, as one of the doctors, one of the researchers working in this suggested, has a special value, I think, for people when they're getting older, when they're kind of locked in to ways of thinking. Not to mention people who are seriously locked into ways of thinking, and I'm talking about addicts and depressives.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. Although I would add, as perhaps a cautionary note, and I'd love to get your take on this. I know from reading your, I actually have your book right here in my hand now, How to Change Your Mind. Mm-hmm. Michael was also the author of The Omnivore's Dilemma and has been on this program before about that. The first time I took acid, it was with a guy named Keith St. Clair, who was one of Tim Leary's 12 disciples that he sent out into the world. And Keith came to East Lansing to MSU to teach us how to appropriately use acid. It was with him and the pastor of the local Methodist church. And we did it in the sanctuary. And then, you know, another experience I had with a group of Native Americans, those were profound experiences, but I had friends who were taking acid and going to parties and ending up having just meltdown horror trips. And so set and setting, I always thought set and setting has to be the beginning and end of the whole thing.
Absolutely right. Those terms, which were introduced by Timothy Leary, but developed a few years before, basically make use of the fact that there are no drugs more suggestible in their effects. There's nothing inherent in the LSD molecule or the psilocybin molecule. It's activating things already present in your mind. And so set means mindset, you know, the kind of internal environment you're dealing with when you embark on one of these journeys. And setting is literally the physical setting. And the fact that you did it in such a sacred place and you had guidance from people you trusted is why you had such a positive experience, I would bet. And
And
people do have horrifying, terrifying experiences. And it's often the result of one of two things. Either the setting, they've taken a handful of mushrooms and walked down the city street or gone to a concert and don't feel safe, or the fact that they were resisting what was happening in their mind. The fact is, at a high dose, these drugs commandeer your mind for a period of time, and you may well feel your sense of self or ego dissolving. Now, that can be a terrifying experience, and if you resist it, you'll get very anxious. So what a guide does, and most of the use of these drugs now in the therapeutic setting is guided very carefully by one or two people who are with you the whole time and are not partaking of the drugs. But the guides prepare you by telling you, you should surrender. Don't fight whatever happens. And if you go with it, if you relax your mind and float downstream, as John Lennon famously wrote, you're bound to have a much more positive experience than if you resist what is happening in your mind.
Yeah, the one thing I remember from Keith speaking to me when I did have a, whoa, what's going on here, was no matter what happens to you, this drug is going to wear off in 5 or 6 hours, no matter what happens. And so, you know, just relax and enjoy it, to the extent that you can, and it will, you know, you're going to come back to normal, whether you want to or not. And, of course, that's what happened. So, Michael, the fate and future of psychedelics, you know, obviously the psychiatric and psychological communities are starting to look at these seriously. The spiritual communities are also looking at them seriously. But the legal community still considers this stuff, you know, if you touch it, you go to prison. Do you see any changes happening in that realm?
It's a Schedule I drug, which is the highest or lowest category. And it means that the drug has no accepted medical use and it has a high potential for abuse. Both those facts turn out not to be true, although officially there's still the line. I think what's happening is that these drugs, along with MDMA, which is also known as ecstasy or Molly, are on a track to be approved by the FDA as medicines, so that the researchers working with them are conducting drug trials under FDA auspices. And once they get through the required set of trials and have tested the drugs on enough people and proven that they're effective and safe, which they're well on their way to doing, the FDA will declare psilocybin and MDMA a medicine. And at that point, doctors will be able to prescribe it. So I think that's the future course. I think there is a very good chance that within the next 5 years, these drugs will be approved for use in medicine. I don't see a future where they'll be legalized for everybody. I think there is a real virtue in controlling or regulating the experience. The kinds of experience, one of the things we learned from traditional cultures, I heard you were just talking about the Shoshone, is that many of them use psychedelics. And this is in the New World and the Old World. There are many psychedelic plants and mushrooms, but they always did it in a highly controlled setting. There were always elders or a shaman present. There was always a sense of ceremony, and you could only use the drugs in this particular setting. I think this minimized the kinds of psychological risks that are a real threat with these drugs. So that whatever happens with it, I would hope that we don't go down the path we did with cannabis, which is kind of, you know, in many states, which is kind of, you know, if you're over 18, you can do whatever you want. I think that the idea of having licensed guides or doctors involved is probably a good one, because they're powerful drugs and they have great potential for benefit and potential for psychological harm.
I would completely agree. Michael Pollan, his new book, How to Change Your Mind, What the New Science of Psychedelics Teaches Us About Consciousness, Dying, Addiction, Depression, and Transcendence. And we didn't even get into a conversation about people who are dying or are in extraordinary pain and how useful these things are. You can read about it in Michael's book. Michael Pollan, great, brilliant work as always. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. A pleasure as usual.
Thank you. Great talking with you. MichaelPollan.com is the website. Hang on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And it's spelled P-O-L-L-A-N. You can tweet him at Michael Pollan.